Billy J, shall I tell everybody about how I had a small breakdown in the middle of my Kickstarter the other day, and I needed my friend Brad Geiger to carry me through?
We always share the highs. We should probably share the not-so-graceful moments as well. Yeah, we should probably tell them about
this. The moments of genuine flop sweat. Yeah. So I'm in, I don't know what it was, week two of my Kickstarter, and it had gotten to a very comfortable point by that point. It was at $99,000.
Yeah.
A couple of readers came to me with a really fun idea that, frankly, Brad, I had never thought of before.
Yeah.
In 20 years of cartooning, how many years of Kickstarting, I've never thought of this before. They said, why don't you make a tier or add-on where folks could buy a book for children's hospitals? Here's an organization. In fact, they suggested a couple of them, and I got on the phone with one of them and said, here's an organization that gathers books from Image and Marvel and DC and sends them to children's hospitals around the country. And also because I was at a point of feeling incredibly grateful, I was like, my God, yeah, I got to turn this gratefulness outward. And so I was like, I would love to do this. So I get on the phone with Comic Books for Kids, which is a great organization in out of Illinois. And we talked about how we could do it. And so I put up an add-on tier on Kickstarter and I announced it. Hey, guys, we're going to do an add-on tier. You can put a heavily, heavily discounted drive and pop culture book into a cart, and we will send it on to children's hospitals in North America. And great, I thought. Done.
Yeah, what a great idea.
Yeah, I immediately get like 10 people jumping in on the donations thing within a couple of minutes. No problem at all. Everything's good. I get another backer chiming in very helpfully saying, hey, just a heads up, I've seen Kickstarter campaigns shut down for this before. You should double check. And I immediately get this flop sweat because I had cleared this process with the 501c, which is the charity in the US, for those that don't know. I'd cleared this with the 501c, gotten their blessing on how we were going to do it. I had done all the logistics of planning out how we were going to ship it. But I had not specifically checked in with Kickstarter. And the Kickstarter was at $99,000 at this point. And I was like, oh God, they're gonna shut me down. So I immediately pause this process and I email my contacts at Kickstarter. By the way, trying to call someone at Kickstarter is nigh impossible. They do not put their phone number anywhere. I email them and I'm like, hey, I was legitimately trying to do this positive thing, but I never want to, I never want to run afoul of your rules. Is this okay? And if it's not okay, how do I do it so that it is okay? And then in the meantime, while I'm waiting for this email, I call Brad Geiger. And Brad, how would you describe my state in this process?
Well, listen, I will say that you were an absolute mess. And having said that, you were still like 10% better than I would have been. I would not have been able to have made words. You were still in the word making phase of mental cognizance, but you were a mess. You were very upset and you're like, oh my God, I've done this thing and now they're going to shut me down and I don't know what I'm going to do about it. And it's all these run-on sentences. And I'm like, and I said, let's hold up just a second. First of all, you immediately put a stop to it. So they can't shut you down because you did this thing and then stopped it because you were afraid of being against the rules. They can't possibly do that. Number two, this is a finite problem. You've only got a finite amount of people that used this special tier.
Right.
And the worst thing that can happen is you find out it's against the rules. You cancel their pledges or cancel the add-ons, whichever is more easy.
Right.
And you say, oh, we couldn't do this and everything's okay again, you know? But at the bottom line that I said that I think I'm trying to find ways to at least help you calm down until you get a definite answer from Kickstarter. Right.
And in the meantime, cut back to your friend Dave, just to give everyone sort of a mental image of where I was emotionally right now. You know when the Three Stooges know that there is a ghost behind them, but they haven't yet turned around? So they're going... Oh, yeah, I guess I'm thinking Abbott and Costello. I'm not thinking of Three Stooges. That's where I was. I was like, yes. Oh, God, what have I done? Because to me.
And the candle is still floating across the coffin.
Because to me, it was two things. It was the fact that the comeuppance of the fact that I thought I had been so smart and had triple checked every step of this process in this Kickstarter. Like Beth and I did so much math before this Kickstarter, right? And I thought, oh, I'm so smart. And what a nice thing. I'll do this thing where we give away books to children's hospitals and cancer centers. Yeah. And then the second thing was the pain of the thought that because I was trying to do charity, it was going to ruin the whole thing. You know what I mean? And so I was very much in a, oh, God, Brad, hold me moment. I need this on the phone.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm trying to go through like what I do it for myself in my personal life is like, what's the worst case scenario? If you can live through that, then you can live through anything going up to that. So I'm trying to think of, and I'm like, really, your worst case scenario, if you really want to go worst case, is they shut you down and then you go out to your backers and say, hey, listen, I made this mistake. I didn't know it was a thing. Obviously, your heart was in the right place. There's no element of chicanery. And you just reopen the Kickstarter. And with your fans, I have zero doubt that they would have just said, okay, yeah, we get it. It's a nuisance, but we'll jump back in. That would have been your worst case. But at some point along the way, I do want credit for this. At some point along the way, I said, let's not forget this very well-meaning backer might not have the right read on this rule. In other words, we looked up
absolutely.
And it was at kickstarter.com/rules. We went to the rule and it said, you cannot generate funds for a charity. And I'm like, you're not generating funds. You're sending books to a charity, but you're not generating funds. This well-meaning, heart in the right place Kickstarter backer may be giving you bad information.
Right.
So let's take that into account as well. And finally, the coup de grace. Don't forget, Kickstarter gets 5% of what you're generating. You've got a very healthy Kickstarter. They do not want to give up their 5% over nothing any more than you want to get shut down over something that is nothing. So they're going to look at it the same way. Right. So I sat there out on my front porch going through as many different things as I could to try to kind of, because I've been in your situation and it's absolutely heartsick at that point.
Oh, yeah. So Brad, to represent a part of the body, Brad was very much the cerebellum going, everything's going to be okay. Here are the 10 reasons. We're going to go through each of the 10 reasons of why this is okay. Meanwhile, I'm being the pyloric sphincter going, oh, God. That's the part of the body that I was being. And oh, God. Oh, geez. Brad's right to all of that. And by the way, he's absolutely right that even well-meaning backers or patrons or readers can push you to astray on certain things in this sense that, you have a wide enough distribution of people, you're going to get some dummies as well. But anyway, there was just enough truth sounding in the way this person had said,
yes,
I have seen these shut down for this reason, that it triggered a full on panic in me. And I was like, oh no, I would really like $100,000. This is good. I don't want this to go away. And the idea that I had just blown it out of generosity, that I was trying to be a nice person and had blown it. It was bumming me out. Anyway, so Brad's like, all right, are we good, buddy? Are you feeling okay? And I'm like, yeah, I think I'm all right. He's like, are you sure, champ? You're okay? And I'm like, yeah, Brad, you did it. You calmed me down. Your logic has powered through my emotion. And he's like, all right, you're going to hear from him soon. So we're going to say goodbye now. We'll talk. You're going to ping me when they reach out to you. And I go, okay, bye. And then literally there's a half second pause. And I'm like, I just need to hear it from your voice one more time and it's going to be okay, Brad. I literally made you say it one more time before we got off the phone.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm trying to come up with one more different way of saying it, you know, and I had to revert to karma because it's like, Dave, let's look at it this way. You've over 20 years, you've built up enough karma. If this absolutely catches fire, you can weather the storm. You will be okay. You've got enough karma to get you through.
And it worked. The good news is, everybody, Kickstarter could not have been nicer when they emailed back. They said, first of all, this seems like a really wonderful and generous thing to do. And then they said, you know what? Just to be on the super safe side, let's run it by our trust and safety team, which basically is their lawyer and their terms and conditions for person. Ran it by them. They cleared it. I'm in the clear. It's okay. Everything's fine. We are going to send the comic books for kids. A good half-size palette of books. I think we now have approaching 200 books donated already, which is wonderful.
Wow.
And so that's delightful. And then what's nice is Comic Book for Kids said, if we have any hospitals in the LA area that would like some, would you like to personally drive them over? And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I would. That'd be kind of fun. So I'm going to drive those over and then ship the rest out. So that'll be fun. Oh, nice. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and occasionally panicking.
And occasionally panicking and occasionally making in your pants and making from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. And as we mentioned, that this show is going out live right now to our VIP members over at Comic Lab, patreon.com/comiclab, to our live gab members. I should mention, Brad, and point out with huge thanks that this week's show is sponsored by the great folks at Wacom at WACOM.com, makers of the Wacom One, which Brad and I both use and love in our daily work here at the studios in Philadelphia and Los Angeles. So a huge shout out and a thank you to Wacom and the makers of the Wacom One. By the way, Wacom Pro also in my the Cintiq Pro also on my desk. It is a full love affair over here for Wacom. So it is the perfect match made in heaven that they are sponsoring the show.
Absolutely. And one thing to mention about the live stream that came up just recently, Dave, is some people in the Comic Lab Discord server said they didn't understand that when you're a member at that level that gives you the VIP access to the live streams every week, you also get access to the archive of the live streams. So if you're not able to catch us every week as we're doing it live, you can still go back and watch the video that has basically the entire thing. You can see the recording in progress and see the archives of those shows. So that's something I wanted to make sure that I mentioned as well. If you're thinking about becoming a VIP member, that's something that is available to you as well. You can see the archive of that live stream.
A perfect clarification, Brad. So if folks were interested in seeing my flop sweat from reminiscing about my past panic attack, then by gosh, today is the day to go check out the archives.
Absolutely.
And Brad, our first topic for today, and I know you want to jump right into this, we're going to talk about email newsletter management for cartoonists and comic makers around the world. And so Bradley J. Geiger, I turn over the stage to you. Take us through email newsletter management.
Absolutely. So this was a topic that was pitched, and immediately when I saw it, I'm like, well, what's there to email newsletter management? You set up an account with, you know, with somebody like MailChimp, if not using MailChimp, and you hook it up to your RSS, or you come up with a newsletter that you make live every week, and then you distribute it. Bing, bang, boom, done. And the more we talked about it, the more I'm like, but also you'd want to do this, you'd want to do that. And before I knew it, we had kind of an entire segment worked up. So what we're going to be talking about is managing an email newsletter. Now, this dovetails nicely with a lot of the past episodes that we've been saying quite a bit. We've been talking about the topic of late stage social media. In other words, I've been saying for quite a few months now that it looks like we're starting to near the end of the pendulum swing of social media. It's we're coming to an end here, and we have to prepare for it.
By the way, can I just pause to say that I love when you say late stage social media, because to me, it sounds like we're dipping a toe into academia. We're like, well, Now, as we've talked about in last week's Comic Lab, post-industrialist neo-Marxism is a really important part of how you're going to be structuring your business. You know what I mean? Like something about late-stage social media just sounds like something that an academic would come up with. But you're right. It's a perfect phrasing for what we're in. But every week I'm like, oh, Brad's writing his dissertation. Here we go. Late-stage social media.
Well, I stole it from late-stage capitalism because there's kind of parallels between those two conversations where the idea of late stage capitalism means we've come so far near the end of capitalism that it's having all these knock on effects. And it's kind of the same thing with social media. The algorithms have locked down so much. It's very similar.
Could I describe my current health as late stage good health? Would that be what it is?
Or early stage diabetes?
I'm laughing because I'm crying.
You and me both. So I think that we need to start planning for a post social media future. I think at some point, and we've talked about this a few times. And this also double dovetails into one of my long shot theories that RSS is going to be involved somehow in the next phase.
Oh, man, from your lips to God's ears. I don't know how, but that would be wonderful if RSS came back.
But obviously, most of your email newsletters,
by the way,
come right off of your RSS.
I keep jumping on your toes. I'm sorry about that. But I got to say this about RSS, because every time we say, boy, I hope RSS comes back, there's always one 55-year-old programmer that comes in and goes, I've never given up on RSS. I'm the one that still uses it. I love RSS. Yes. All right, Greg, we get it. You still use RSS. The rest of the world does not. And that's why we say we wish it went back. But thank you, Greg. We understand that you're still a Java programmer and you use RSS all the time, but no one else does.
Thank you for keeping hope alive. Enjoy your Netscape browser. And we're going to go back to the show now.
Enjoy your Netscape browser.
So this is something that dovetails nicely into a lot of the topics that we've been talking about. And even if you don't believe anything about late stage social media, this is a good way to do a lot of the things that we talk about every week on this show. In other words, once you've done a good comic, once you've made that your number one thing, and you know that anything else you do after that isn't going to be as effective until you do it. Once you've done all these things, there's a number of other things that you can do and should do to build your audience. This is one of them. It's an email newsletter. So let's talk about some of the things you should keep in mind as you do an email newsletter. Number one, I'm a big fan of MailChimp. MailChimp was out in front of the whole email outreach thing. They've been doing it for years. They've got a really, really nice interface that makes it easy to set up. They've got all this stuff down pat. It is true. Once you get to the higher levels, you're going to have to start paying for it. I think the first level is free until you get to a certain level. And then they say like a number of users that this is going out to. And then at that point, you got to have to start paying a monthly fee. That's only fair. And again, like we've said so many times on the show, you want to be in a position where you're paying for some of this stuff that you use. Number one, when you switch over to becoming a business, that's a tax write-off. Number two, every time I've used any kind of free service or free software, there always comes a time when the developer or whomever's in charge of keeping it up to date has to move on to some other things because they need to get paid too. So I would just assume pay for some of this stuff than have free stuff, because I know that person's getting an incentive to keep this thing going.
Yeah. So I also am a MailChimp user. And like Brad, I also want and appreciate paying for a service that I know is the service itself, in the sense that we have enough services now in our life where our data is the payment, and therefore you don't really get customer service. You're being treated as a source of data. One of the things about MailChimp that we should all keep in mind is you are paying for service. It's very usable. The interface is great, but Apple is rolling out iOS 15 in the Mail app in the fall, and that's going to be much like they've done with apps, Brad. Apple's done with apps. The Mail app is going to be scrubbing tracking data from the way it handles mail. So one of the things that's going to do is it's going to diminish the usability of MailChimp in terms of tracking what's working and what, because right now you can see what percentage of people clicked link number one in the email you sent out versus link number two versus link number three. You can see where you can kind of see where their eyeballs stopped reading, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You can see who opened, who didn't open, all that sort of stuff. A lot of that tracking ability for Apple will be going away in the fall with the mail, with the revised Mail app. And frankly, as a user, I don't mind that. I think, God, we could all use with a little bit more control and privacy in our lives. So that's great. But it does impact us as creators with our ability to finesse what's working. Having said that, I'm okay with it, broadly speaking, as long as people are getting the emails and they're opening the emails. So that's one thing to talk about. Actually, with MailChimp, or the one thing that I would like to talk about with MailChimp is that when you're sending people to your mail list, you're going to get a landing page with MailChimp. And Brad can talk about the landing page in a minute. But one thing I want to talk about is you can give them different options for how they would like to receive their mail. So with Sheldon and Drive, when people are presented with the options, you can get Sheldon, you can get Drive, you can get Sheldon every time a Sheldon appears, or you can get one email at the end of the week with all the Sheldons for that week. Same with Drive. You can get the Drive updates as they come or the Drive updates once a week. If I was smart, I could probably do one that comes every month, although that feels a little bit too much out of sight, out of mind for me. I would want to get at least on their radar once a week. But what that does is that gives a little bit more user control. Frankly, some people are swimming in emails and they're like, I love you, Dave. I want your comics. I just can't do it every day. I'll do it once a week, you know, that kind of thing. But Brad, why don't you take everybody through the landing page? Because you have a really clever use of a landing page with MailChimp, and I would love for people to hear about it.
Yeah. Well, what happened with MailChimp is I set this up a long time ago, and it was kind of running on autopilot because I really wasn't paying it very close attention. Mm-hmm. And so when you set up one of these email newsletters, you kind of have access to a very nuts and bolts signup form for your email newsletter. And it looks like a signup form that would have been generated using HTML 1 in 2002. You know, it's a gray box. It's got name and then a field, email and then a field, and a couple of radial buttons, and you're done. And it's kind of the default. It was the default that I was using for a long, long time for signups. If somebody wanted to sign up, if I was promoting a signup, I sent them there. It had this long, bizarre URL, and it looked like something from 15 years ago. And as I was doing a little bit of research to try to improve my game, I saw that you could have a landing page. And I'm like, oh, yeah, landing page. What's this? Well, it turns out you can actually design an entire landing page. So if somebody wants to sign up for this this new newsletter, you have it designed exactly the way you want it to look. So I've got a solid black background. I've got a tagline that I've been using that I'm going to talk about in a little bit. The sign-up form, a cast shot of my characters for my strip. I've got it. It looks very nice, very well designed, very professional. The URL is some derivation of MailChimp. I'm looking, trying to see if I can find it right now.
No, that's
I'm afraid,
okay. Well, let me tell you this though, Brad, is that I, like you, had the sort of default from a few years back set up for my mail landing.
Yeah.
Page. And when you alerted me to the idea of like, hey, have you, because, you know, it's tricky to keep track of everything. And Brad alerts me, hey, there's a new landing page feature on MailChimp. It's so much better. Brad's is so much better than mine. Beth and I are about to do a deep dive after this Kickstarter, once we get the books off to production. Our mailing list is basically sort of our next big task, because for all the reasons that Brad and I will be talking about today. But one of the things we're going to be doing is shaping our landing page to be more like Brad. So I would highly recommend you guys go check out Brad and his landing and his use of MailChimp with the landing page, because it's very welcoming. Yeah. It's very warm. It's very easy to navigate. And it's got, I think, one of the most effective little taglines. Well, let's just go right to it, Brad. What do you got on there?
Let's talk about that tagline, because I've been using it on social media quite a bit. We've gotten to, again, this goes back into the late stage social media. at this point, everybody, including my mom, understands what a social media algorithm is. We've heard that word so many times in so many different usages. Everybody knows what the algorithm is. Everybody understands that it throttles the content that they are right. getting through social media. And everybody's a little bit sour about it. I would not have used this tagline 3 or 5 years ago because I didn't think we had hit that point yet. But now we're at the point where when we talk about the algorithm, people are already kind of fired up about it. So I started using this tagline here. Don't let an algorithm decide if you see what happens next. There's a couple things that's really good about that. Number one, always try to get the word you into this kind of outreach. And, you know, what you see, what you get, yours, you, those kind of words are powerful for people.
Right. It's a sort of self-determination word. And it's the exact same reason why that one ad that was almost memeified for 10 years there on the internet of like the health trick the doctors don't want you to know, or, you know, the three simple weight loss tricks these companies don't want you to know. But it is a really effective way because it's putting self-determination center stage. And it's sort of depicting an either or of like, well, if you don't choose self-determination, then they're deciding for you. And that's what I think is brilliant about Brad's little tagline there.
Right. And don't let an algorithm decide is a really powerful statement that most of your people are automatically going to understand. I've seen really good response, a dramatic increase in new subscribers using that tagline and the new MailChimp landing page. Those two things together has gotten me some really surprisingly good results. So I would suggest, again, this is something like anything else you're going to want to do repeated messaging on. Just the same as you do repeated messaging on a Kickstarter or your Patreon. Mm-hmm, if you want to build this, number one, it's got to be in a prominent place on your website where they have to understand that they can sign up to get this emailed to them, this comic emailed to them directly. It's got to be easy to sign up. Again, I would make use of that landing page. And in your social media messaging, you're going to want to come up with some kind of derivation of that phrase. And if you don't like the one that I wrote, write one of your own that fits your phraseology a lot better. But what you're trying to do is get people to understand that this is the outcome. You may not see every comic if you're following me on Twitter or on Facebook or Instagram. This is a way that if you actually get interested in this thing that I'm doing, you can keep track of it every time it comes out. You are in control of your reading.
Right. And I do think, though, that as much as everybody, to your earlier point, as much as everybody says that they are aware that there is an algorithm limiting them, not everyone is clear on the idea, Brad, that they don't get to see every Brad Geiger, Dave Kellett comic if they've signed up for us on social media, because you don't know what you don't know, frankly. And so if they're not presented with a comic, then they don't know that that everyone else is getting it, but they didn't. And when what were the algorithm's reasons for them not getting it? So it's for some people, it's revelatory when you tell them that. And they're like, oh, God, wait, no, I do want all this. I really enjoy your comics. And I never saw this one from last week, you know. I'm almost thinking when I redesign my thing, I might have a visual that says like, here's the last 10 comics you know, and then literally have an X of you didn't see these four because the algorithm didn't show them to you. You know, them a physical visual example of what you didn't get by the algorithm.
Here's another outreach phrasing that I use that I've gotten really good results from. And that is for my Evil Inc. comic, which is a storyline. It's an ongoing storyline. If I'm posting something that has a cliffhanger in it or has a really significant moment, or if this storyline is building, my outreach at that point is going to be, don't miss what happens next.
Yeah.
And the, you know, and to say the only way to really make sure that you see what happens next is to sign up for the email newsletter. You know, right. you want to see what happens next. You don't want to miss this. This is a very, very significant part. Now, the way to do it, take charge and sign up for that email newsletter.
And to get to step back a bit and give you guys a broader picture before we move to the next topic. You might be thinking, well, this is just Dave and Brad complaining because they haven't figured out how to use Facebook right, or they're not using Instagram right, and
yeah,
that's why they're complaining about it. This is a broader picture that I think is reinforced by multiple other cartoonists. I'm thinking of like Matt Inman of The Oatmeal in this case,
mm-hmm.
who, let's be honest, built an amazing following on Facebook, you know, did gangbusters, and now is saying out loud in comic and in tweets, guys, you got to stop following me on Facebook. Follow me on my mail newsletter, because I can't even reach a tenth of you without paying for it. And in every step of the way, as a user, as a creator, as a community, the experience has been diminished. And so to own and control your own career, which is something that Brad and I always say, we're really going to start advocating more and more for an increased pitch towards newsletters. And now, listen, that's imperfect. As Brad says, it's going to be cost-based. You're going to have to pay for it. There's going to be mail limitations right now. Even Google Mail, Gmail has shunting sometimes into spam and things like that that you might not have expected. But for all its imperfections, at least you can control as best as possible how you reach your fans. So I think for that reason, both Brad and I are pro mailing list.
Absolutely.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
Now, as you're setting your mailing list up, there's one more thing I want you to think about, and it goes back once again to something we've been saying a lot over the past several months, and that is this. I want you to have that comic in your email newsletter as a vertical scroll, and I'll tell you why. Google themselves have done research that says that 75% of Gmail readers or Gmail users are accessing their email on their phones.
Wow, really? I did not know that number. Wow.
75% of them are accessing email on their phones. So you want to send your comic out in a format that it can be read on their phone. They need to scroll right down through it. Again, it, much like social media, the same logic applies. You don't want them to have to jump through a lot of hoops. In other words, sometimes way, way back in the day, I had mine set up that if you got the email, you clicked a link and then it brought you over to the site where you could read the comic, right? We're not doing that anymore. We want to cut those jumps out. You want to open that email and start reading the comic right there. And the best way to do that, don't make them pinch and zoom. They're not going to suffer that for very long. You want that in a vertical scroll.
I got to tell you this. So everybody at home listening, imagine Brad as he's saying, you need a vertical scroll. But as he's vertically scrolling, he's got this very limp-wristed, limp-fingered finger that's like scrolling in midair. And the problem is he's doing it right in front of the camera. So all of a sudden, it's like the showers at the gym I don't know what I'm looking at as Brad is scrolling. I'm like, where is this camera, Brad? Stop limp-fingering this camera. I don't know what's going on with this. I do not enjoy this. This is not what I signed up for, doing this podcast.
I'm just looking at it now, and that's
stop talking about vertical scrolling. No, no more finger. Get it out of there. Get it out of the camera. Oh, God, I don't want this. Ah, I'm learning too much about Brad. Oh, God. All right, Brad, I'm going to jump us into our next topic. And this one comes in from our friend Donald over at patreon.com/comiclab. And Donald writes, hey, guys, have either of you ever considered wrapping up your current strips and starting a new project altogether? So, Brad, have you ever considered folding it in, throwing in the towel, giving up?
Donald, are you trying to tell me something, Donald? What kind of a question? Have you ever considered stopping what you're doing? Just think about it, maybe, you know?
Hey, Brad, I just a quick note, Donald, we're joking around, but Brad, have you ever considered the cold embrace of death and how nice that might be, Brad? just the quiet of it all. Doesn't that sound lovely, Brad?
Getting a little rest for once, yeah. Obviously, Donald, we are kidding, but have we ever considered? Yeah, I absolutely, I think that at some point, just to bring you back to the beginning, I started Evil Inc. as a comic strip, and I started with the two characters in a married, happy relationship. And it took me quite a few years to realize I started at absolutely the worst place for this whole thing. The real excitement is how these two people met.
Yeah, you're right. You kind of started where life gets boring, huh?
I started when they're all settled in. They've got a kid. They know how to get the kid to school. And I mean, they don't have enough conflict in their life to make it really good.
You started the story at the point in most marriages where people go, what about a vacation? Wouldn't it be nice to have a vacation? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I started right when things start to settle down, and maybe psychologically that's where I was most comfortable, was with everything nice and balanced. Right. But it wasn't great for the story. So when I rebooted the comic in 2016, I rebooted to the point where these two didn't even know each other. They obviously weren't married. They were going to run into each other, and the relationship was going to blossom. And I've been doing that, and I've gotten them to a point now where they're kind of together and starting their relationship. At some point when this whole thing comes full circle, I'm going to have to make a decision. Do I branch off and start following another relationship? Do I change the purview of the comic itself? Because really the comic, along with being a corporation for supervillains, has been very much about Captain Heroic falling in love with a supervillain, Miss Madge. Right. And when that comes full circle, I've got to make a decision. And I am 50-50 about changing Evil Inc. or just putting a pause on it and experimenting with starting something completely different, just starting a whole new thing. And I got to tell you, that excites me to no end.
Wow. I don't know that I've ever heard you describe it that way in terms of your plans. That's kind of exciting that that's a possibility that you might say, you know what, put this on hold, pause it, start something entirely new.
And that's something I want to talk about too, is that sometimes I see creators have this problem all the time where they're like, well, I can't stop this. I've took 10 years to build it. I can't stop it. Yeah, you can. Anybody you lose, you can get back. There's an infinite pool. One of the things that is absolutely on the table for me, mentally at least at this point, is pausing Evil Inc., trying something. And then after a couple of years, if that doesn't work, starting Evil Inc. again, or starting something restarting something that I had paused. All of those things are yours to do with that you built. They're yours to do with as you please. Nothing is ever done completely. And then there's nothing that can't be gone back to and rebooted. Right. There's nothing but opportunities when it comes to this stuff. So that's something that once you realize that as a creator, it makes it a lot easier to make some of these decisions, because now ending Evil Inc. isn't a final thing. It's a pause, and it might be an indefinite pause, or it might be in a pause until a couple of years where I decide, oh, now I figured out what I want to do with it, and then go back to it.
Well, in a related note to the idea of pausing, somewhere, I don't know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, a number of creators, and I honestly don't know who did it first, a number of creators introduced the idea of seasons, We're ending this season of my comic Skip Bibbles, and we'll restart the new season of Skip Bibbles in the fall, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so for one thing, it gives them a mental break, but it also gives the audience a clean break to say, like, that chapter is done. That part of the story is done. And now, and also people have gotten used to the idea that that stories take a breather. You think about what you've read, you percolate on it a little bit, and then you jump back into it in the fall. So even though I haven't done that, I find that interesting that that now exists in comics because it never existed, because no business model would have allowed for it in either newspaper or in DC Marvel publishing, where you could be like, can you imagine Stan Lee being like, all right, true believers, Iron Man's going away for 6 months. We like the money, but not that much. So we're going to just put it on pause. So I like that idea. And I appreciate that you might step away or pause Evil Inc. with the caveat that it's yours to control and own. If you want to go back to it 5 years later, 10 years later, you can. I have also thought about how and when and if I would ever end Sheldon and Drive. Drive is unique in that it has a definitive end. It's a five-act structure for that story. I've got about another 5 years to tell that story. So it'll be about 15 years for me to do the whole thing. And when it's done, though, a couple of years ago, I got a follow-up story in my mind of what happens a few years after that story ends.
Mm.
So if I and the world are amenable to it, I may do a follow-up story, you know, a sort of... What's the follow-up to Full Metal Alchemist? They call it Full Metal Alchemist, like New Hope or something. I don't remember what the title is.
Yeah.
But I might do a Drive, you know, Reawakened or something, whatever the title would be, where I would take a pause and then come back to it later. So I can see how that would happen. But even if I end up doing that, that story will come to an end. It'll have a finite ending, and Drive will be done, and it will be complete at some point. And it will sit up on my bookshelf like other creators like Jeff Smith's Bone and that kind of thing, where you don't go back to it. Well, in Jeff's case, he did for a bit. But you know what I mean? It's a done deal. Now, Sheldon is interesting because I have experienced virtually every emotion you can experience with a comic about, like, I'm going to end it. No, it's my life's work. Yeah. No, I want to do it. Oh, I'm going to change it to whatever I want it to be. And I'm very comfortable right now with its publishing schedule and its topics of daily discussion on the strip and how it does it, or whatever I want it to be. Basically, exactly. Sheldon has become my outlet for whatever. It's fine. I'm a cartoonist. Here's some cartoons I did. They were free. Go ahead and read them.
Yeah.
And I basically took the pressure off myself that Sheldon has to be a certain thing. And I enjoy it much more now. So could I end it at any given time? Absolutely. Have I thought about that? Absolutely. But I still enjoy, if I'm being honest about it, Brad, having some sort of outlet that just allows for the nonsense, the silly one-off jokes that are not the long-form story that is Drive, you know?
Yeah. Now, would you ever stop Sheldon and then start doing a different comic that is anything you want it to be, but without those characters? Or do you still like bringing those
characters? I already have a title
in
mind, actually. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't tell us. I want that URL to be available.
Yeah, I shouldn't say it, but tell it. Why not? You know those yellow school bus signs that are they're a diamond shape and it has like kids crossing a crosswalk.
Yeah,
but it's a black silhouette of characters silhouetted against a yellow background.
Yeah,
I would have a gigantic woolly mammoth crossing that. So a black silhouette of a woolly mammoth. And the comic would be called Mammoth Crossing. I don't know why, but that's the name of the comic that I would be calling.
I like that.
And the idea it's just nonsense. It's more farsighty kind of stuff. Sometimes it'd be single panel. Sometimes it'll be multiple panel. It wouldn't necessarily have repeatable characters. But for the time being, I like Sheldon and that I can dip back into these characters that I know and that people know. And then also go off and do random nonsense. So I've made it fit what I need. But to answer your question, though, Donald, I've absolutely thought about ending it. And Brad, what do you think the conditions are for ending something well? Let's answer that real quick.
Oh, ending it well. Well, I mean, the first thing for a storyline comic is tying up all the major loose ends, right? I mean, there are always going to be some questions that remain unanswered. But You want to, if you're going to do that and you've been doing a storyline based comic, you really want to give your readers a sense of closure at the end. Right. Mm-hmm, and you want to give it a sense of finality. And that's where you really want to reach your final threshold of balance. Right. You want everything to be in harmony at that point. Or at least I would for my taste. But closure is the word for me, and bringing everything to a place where your major questions are answered. I'm not sure if there's anything that's as important to that. For me, am I missing something? For me, the word is closure.
Yeah, no, if it's long form, you've got to wrap it up. And you frankly have got to stick that landing. In a way, the hardest thing to do in a long form story, right behind getting people to care, is now you've got them to care. Now stick that landing. It is so hard in a satisfying way to stick the landing. And so I worry about that all the time with Drive. Because I've gotten people to care. I care. And I gotta bring this plane down in a good way, or else people are gonna be so mad at me. And I'll be mad at me. You know what I mean? If I don't stick the landing. But I will say this about my ending for Drive, and I think you'll find this sort of sweet. I get so excited, Brad, viscerally excited, when I think about the epilogue that I'm going to write for Drive, right?
I
like go to sleep at night going, oh, people are going to love that epilogue. Oh, I'm so excited 5 years from now to write that epilogue. I already know what the epilogue is. I'm going to end the story. I'm going to wait 2 weeks, and then we're going to have an epilogue that's going to run three or four, maybe five updates. And I already know what it's going to be, and people are going to flip a shit when it comes out, because it's going to basically upturn the story that just ended, and people are going to love it. So I'm so it's stupid, but I'm so excited for something that's going to happen 5 years from now with the epilogue of the story.
Well, you are right about the importance of sticking the landing. And all we have to do is take a look at Game of Thrones to see narrative where people were very invested.
As I slough out of my chair. Oh, man.
Yeah. But I mean, I was just reading an article not so long ago that said that the stain of that last season still remains with HBO. And now I think they're shopping around, or they're trying to promote a sequel to Game of Thrones. I think it's called House of Dragons. But anyway, the article said that they're trying to talk to advertisers and people about how great this Game of Thrones thing, and nobody wants to touch it because it's Game of Thrones. And it was great, but it ended so terribly. It's almost got like a radioactive half-life, and nobody wants to touch it.
Well, the part of the problem, Brad, is did you see what the title they're shopping it under? I don't know if you saw this one. So they're going to call it Game of Thrones, : this one we won't fuck up. That's what they're calling it. And so it's a little bit hard of a pitch, you know?
It's a dicey pitch to go
in there. It's a tricky pitch. Like, you're going out to advertisers. You're like, hey, Ford, hey, Procter & Gamble. And they're like, nah, I don't know. But it was amazing how you run out of source material and the story just fell apart. It was like, yikes, this is really not great, guys. Maybe sit and talk to him a little bit about where we're going to stick this landing.
Well, yeah. And kind of like, it was almost like these people that came in and wrote the last season didn't know who the characters were.
Right,
it's like, I've been watching this all along, and it's like, I know who these characters are. And then everything they do in that last couple of episodes had nothing to do with those characters were about.
And years long character arc building was literally thrown out the window within a half a second on certain episodes. You're like, wait, what was the whole journey to Blappity Blap? Or why did they fight Hoobity Hoo? Yeah. None of this matters, I guess. We're just like making it up for this last season. You're right. Anyway,
it's almost like and I'm going to bring this back to the topic. They gave up closure in exchange for surprise. Instead of writing the best closure, they tried to come up with the biggest surprise. But there's a problem with that. And that is, since you're writing the ending, it's more important to have closure than surprise.
Gosh, you have hit something that's really important, because I'll tell you what's happening with Drive now as I'm starting to get into Act 4 from Act 3, which is I'm having more and more people guess what the ending is, right? Now, I'm not commenting on it. I'm letting them guess in the comments and in the forums, right? I see them, and some of them, it's like, oh shit, that's really close to my notes. Oh God, that's really spot on. Shit, they really figured it out. And granted, those are the smart readers that are really doing a close reading and really reading between the lines, right? They've been following along. But I think what happens to some creators is they go, oh, some people are guessing the ending. Guess I gotta change the ending. Whereas you have focused all your structure on building certain plot lines, building certain character arcs, pointing to a destination, and some people guess that destination, that's okay. That happens with Brothers Karamazov. It happens with Catcher in the Rye. It happens with, like, doesn't matter what the story is. Some people are going to figure out what the ending is, and that's okay. So don't change who you are just because some people are starting to partially guess the ending.
What was that movie with the little kid who saw dead people?
Seven Signs. The M. Night Shyamalan movie. Now I'm blanking on it.
Doesn't matter what the name was.
Sixth Sense.
Not Seven Signs, Sixth Sense. Listen, there were people that guessed the ending. There were people that knew it immediately. That didn't make that a bad film. That was still a good film, even though, let's say, 25% of the people that were in the movie theaters watching that movie guessed what was going on.
Right.
Still a good film. It would have been terrible if they would have changed the ending to try to throw off that 25%.
But that's why I think it's so important the way you described Game of Thrones is they threw out character arc, they threw out plot lines in favor of surprise. I a little bit feel like they read too many of their own forums and message boards of like, well, people figured out where we're going with this. Can't do that. Now, oh, you know what? Now in the eighth season of Game of Thrones, a spaceship comes down. People are like, what the fuck? What is this? This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah, but then they're over there saying, you didn't expect that, did you?
Didn't expect that, did you?
Of course I didn't expect that. Their whole character is 100% against that. Yeah. Nobody expected it because it's wrong.
Hey, guys, turns out Jon Snow invents gunpowder. Here we go. You didn't expect that, did you? What? What is this?
Surprise!
I know. I guess surprise. We fooled you. You didn't see this one coming. So anyway, I think to finish that thought. So for a storyline, you got to stick the landing. I think for comic strips, single panels, if you're going to wrap it up, here is a bit of advice that I would give you. Every cartoonist that I have ever known that ended a strip, once they're done, that site never gets maintenance again. They're like, shine it. Why put effort into it? So as you wrap it up, put a half day of effort just to cleaning up bits of code here or there. Get rid of old announcements for conventions you went to in 2006. You know, this kind of get rid of all that chaff, basically. And streamline the site so that it can exist as an archive that people can go enjoy. You might even want to put a half day effort into the front pages rotating a comic from the archive that it grabs randomly. That might be fun. But what I'm getting at there is don't just leave it, because I've seen a lot of people do that and they become derelict, kind of sad real quick. So try to wrap up the website itself with a bow so that it could be enjoyed for future readers.
It's like a ghost ship still floating out there on the internet at night. You know, it's
there be it's tales of that there. Website, Brad.
Well, listen, Dave, before we run out of time today, I want to just bring this up at the very end of the show. And that is this. Did you
the
know
the end of
that-
the show? Oh, my God, Brad, we're 52 minutes in.
Look at look at the timer.
I know I sound like a grandfather, but what fun we've been having. Oh, how the time has flown.
I know.
It's already time for you grandkids to go home. Oh, my goodness.
For those of you listening at home, we usually take a break at the 30-minute mark so we don't have audio drift, technical problems. But so our long-suffering editor, Matt, is going to have their hands full with this one. But listen, we're here, so I wanted to tell you this. Happy anniversary. Because
happy anniversary.
As of 4 days from now, our friendship is 20 years old.
No, really?
My first email to Dave Kellett was on July 24th, 2001, and it had to do with getting contact information for a lawyer that specialized in syndicated cartoonists, and I still have it. I still have the email, and it is dated right here, July 24th, 2001, our friendship dates back exactly 20 years in a few days.
Brad, our friendship is off to college. We've got the station wagon. We're dropping off the backpack and the bags and the fan. And they've got that little neon beer light that they're going to hang up in their wall in their dorm. Oh, our little friendship is off to college.
Telling the friendship to make good choices and make good choices.
You know what? Yeah, just because the group is doing it doesn't mean you have to do it, little friendship.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, 20 years.
20 years.
Also 20 years. My God, where did it go?
That's the longest anybody's been able to put up with my voice. I'll tell you that right now. Except my long-suffering wife, of course.
Can I tell you, though, this is where you and I differ in the sense that you have a twinge of sentimentality to you that I do not. I think that's why it makes you a better romance writer than I would ever be. I'm a terrible romance writer. Because a part of me is like just a trucker on a route. Like, I'm friends with Brad Gagger. Burr, burr, gotta go. Burr, don't care. You know, like, 20 years, yeah, that's fine. Whereas Brad's like writing a sweet letter. Dear David, it's been 20 years of our friendship and I've cherished every moment. But really, it's been 20 years since we first met?
It's been 20 years we've known each other. Isn't that amazing? Wow.
That is amazing. That is a lot of Comic-Cons.
I mean, when you look back on all those permutations on what we've done during that time, you know, like going back to the Blank Label Comics forums, where we would every day have these private forums. We would talk back and forth and talk about strategy and stuff like that. Keen Spot, getting pulled up from Keen Space into Keen Spot. What a thrill that was.
Oh, remember the internet dramas of our 20s? Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. If you tried to tell people today, what's amazing is, you try to tell people today that at one point there were entire flame wars over print cartoonists versus web cartoonists, and that these two factions would fight tooth and nail and get really nasty. There would be some real nasty things said back and forth. If you tried to tell somebody in college right now that was the case, they wouldn't know what the heck you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, they'd go print. What's that?
that's my point.
We as such unnecessary dramas. Boy, I'm so glad that all of that phase of cartooning is behind us where, I mean, maybe that exists for younger cartoonists that are on webtoons and I just don't see it. How would I know? But we had some big personalities in comics that were frankly just stirring the pot. And I'm so glad that that's all over now. But anyway, 20 years of friendship. That is great, my friend. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so I just wanted at this point in the show, I just wanted to congratulate you on 20 years and here's to the next 20.
Well, I was just on that note, I was just going to say it's been a lovely 20, Brad. We'll end it here. So this has been the final episode of Comic Lab and we're going to wrap a big bow on this friendship. Brad, it's been lovely being your friend. I wish you the best. I hope life smiles on you and that your days are bright and happy. May the road rise to meet you, Brad. May the wind be at your back.
Speaking of closure, this is it. We're closed. So you've been listening to what may very well be the last Comic Lab. No, there'll be another one. Trust me. The show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your host for all those 20 years, and what a good 20 years they were, have been my friend Brad Gagher, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good friend of 20 years, Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped, the comics documentary, and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And a shout out and a thank you again to our sponsors for today's show, the good folks at Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the Wacom One, which both Brad and I use and love. And I should mention that if you are interested in hosting the Comic Lab show with me, you can email me at dave@davekellett.com. Once we bid adieu to Brad, we'll be interviewing new hosts next week after these good 20 years. The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode like this one. Dave Will came in with a 5-star review. You got to listen to this. Will says, Brad and Dave have been honing their craft as comic creators for decades, at least two. They have also been making what they love doing a viable business in a volatile, ever-changing entertainment market. What will you get from listening to Comic Lab? You get insight on all aspects of the creative process. You get tips on business practices, marketing, and promotion. You get insights from guest professionals in the field. You also get friendship, humor, heart, and grammar tips that will make you question all of your life choices. Even if you have no interest in comics, you will find something of value here that will apply to your own endeavors. Or, at the very least, it will be fun. You're welcome in advance.
Wow, what kind words. That's really, yeah. That's really, really nice.
It's super nice.
I genuinely appreciate that. And I gotta say, I was listening back. We do end up with a lot of language and grammar conversations in both directions, don't we? It's just enough Philly and just enough Los Angeles differences in Englishisms where we banter back and forth about. I have learned more than a few words, the main one being champing at the bit from Brad Geiger, where the show has. But anyway, thank you for the kind words, and we appreciate it when you head over to Apple and to different Spotify has them as well to rank and comment on the show. It makes it a nice difference for the algorithm. And more than anything else, it's a nice thing for Brad and I to hear that we're on the right path. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
I will say Comic Lab is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that like my new host next week, Greg, patreon.com/comiclab. I don't know why Greg was.
Oh, I hope for your sake it's a Craig with a C, and you always call him Greg by mistake, and you have a tenacious relationship for the next 20 years.
As long as Craig has a good laugh, we just need to replace you with someone that has an equally good laugh, and then we're good to go.
Good luck.
Excelsior, true believers, it's time for Sensational Stan, Shattering Some Shakespeare. And today we're jumping in with the jaunty, jolly, juicy jocularity of Sonnet number 18. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Ooh, thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease has all too short a date. Sometime too hot. The eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed, and every fair from fair sometimes declines, by chance or nature's changing course, untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou oust, nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines is time to groust. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee. Ha ha! Fantastic! I tell you, that feels like that could have used a little bit more of the perky, playful polish in its perspicuity, but it is perfectly praiseworthy nonetheless.